Welcome to China Focus. I'm Jim Stevenson, along with Sarah Williams.
Hong Kong officials canceled talks with protesters following their vow of civil disobedience.
Some in mainland China are unaware of the Hong Kong protests.
An earthquake strikes southwestern China.
Our roundtable explores the Hong Kong crisis in depth.
And a famed New York City hotel is purchased by a Chinese company. Hello and welcome to China Focus.
This week we look at the Hong Kong protests for most of the show.
The Hong Kong government called off talks with student protesters that were meant to ease tensions after weeks of pro-democracy protests in the Chinese territory. Chief Secretary Carrie Lam told reporters Thursday that the protesters' call for expansion of the movement has shaken the trust of the government and made productive talks impossible. Lam said the government does not want to be linked with possibly illegal actions. She said, "We cannot accept the fact that someone will link the talks with possible continued illegal Occupy Central actions." Meanwhile, the protest leader said increased pressure was needed ahead of the talks to ensure progress toward direct elections. VOA's Daniel Scharf reports from Hong Kong.
Leaders of the major groups organizing the occupation in the afternoon declared a new wave of civil disobedience. They vowed to step up pressure on the government for constitutional change and urged the public to rally at a central protest site. Protest leader Alex Chow is with the Federation of Students.
"And if this government is not sincere and has no will to really respond to Hong Kong citizens' demand on constitutional reform, then the next step would be more methods and way of disobedience struggle in Hong Kong."
For 2 weeks, thousands of student-led protesters have occupied key business parts of Hong Kong, demanding that the Beijing-approved chief executive step down. They also want constitutional changes to prevent China's decision to allow only its approved candidates to run for chief executive, Hong Kong's top official. Hong Kong officials say they are willing to discuss the students' concerns, but have indicated there will not be a change on the election rules and that the chief executive will not step down. And they have asked the protesters to leave the city's streets, saying the demonstrations are illegal and disrupt life for residents. Joshua Wong, founder of the student group Scholarism, says they are considering additional actions.
"If our request will not be accepted, Scholarism will try to plan the third time of secondary school class boycott."
Opposition political supporters in Hong Kong's legislature announced their support for the demonstrators and a plan to impeach Chief Executive Leung Chun-ying. Leung has been accused of improperly accepting over $6 million from an Australian company while in office. He denies the funds were improper. Pan-Democratic Camp Representative Alan Long:
"We are actively gathering evidence, and as soon as the draft charges are ready, we would move a motion of impeachment in the council."
Daniel Scherf, VOA News, Hong Kong.
While the Hong Kong protests have been receiving massive news coverage overseas, in mainland China, state media continue to limit public information about the events in the port city. VOA's Bill Ide reports from Beijing.
In most parts of the world, news of the protests in Hong Kong has been competing for the top spot in the global news lineup. On the streets in Beijing, several people that we spoke with did not even know about the protests. One Beijing resident and his friend told us they did not know about Occupy Central, but began telling us about a recent spike in cases of dengue fever in Guangzhou, thinking that was the news we were referring to. Some were aware, but because of the political nature of the topic, were unwilling to share their views. This woman says that regardless of whether it is Beijing or Hong Kong, people should put stability first. She says the public benefits the most from stability and suffers the most when there is instability. When asked what she thought about the students' demands, she said she hasn't been following the news that closely. This older Beijing resident, surnamed Liu, says the United States has its own version of democracy, and so does China. He says China's version is both democratic and requires the centralization of authority. If there is democracy but no central authority, then the country will be in chaos, he adds. Liu says he does not think the impact of the protests will be that big or last much longer. The government in Hong Kong cannot let it go on endlessly, he says. However, not all were convinced that the protests were bad. One younger Beijing resident, surnamed Wang, says he has seen reports about the protests, but really does not understand what it is all about, adding that he would like to know more, but cannot seem to find any information about their core demands. Wang says he has a friend who is in Hong Kong for the National Day holiday and that he sent some pictures of the students protesting. He says it looked a little chaotic, but not as bad as he had thought it would be. Bill Ide, VOA News, Beijing.
The pro-Communist Party publication The People's Daily said this week that 150 years of British rule had made some in Hong Kong hostile to democracy. An opinion piece in the newspaper condemned the protests and said they're anti-democratic. It said Hong Kong only began to democratize after the British departed the city in 1997.
Radio Free Asia reports that seven people have been detained by Chinese authorities on public order charges following a poetry recital held outside Beijing to support the Occupy Central movement in Hong Kong. One of those detained, the poet Wang Zong, didn't attend the event but posted a picture of himself online holding an umbrella in support of the Hong Kong protests.
As Hong Kong's pro-democracy movement continues into a second week, an increasing body of evidence suggests Hong Kong and Chinese authorities are turning to data mining to try to thwart the young campaigners. Ivan Broadhead reports on both the ingenuity and sophisticated technology behind the political struggle.
At the entrance to Hong Kong's Admiralty Metro Station, in the heart of the business district, a spot now nicknamed Charging Corner is where eight activists form an orderly queue, each one clutching a mobile telephone. Some of these campaigners have been on the streets for more than a week without electricity, but their smartphones stay charged. Up to 500 people a day have been using this free service. For opponents of the demonstrators, these handsets represent valuable information, with names, addresses, and information about how the protest movement organizes and motivates its followers. This week, VOA has reported on how Chinese scripted malware is lifting data from Android and Apple products in Hong Kong. Legislator Charles Mok, who represents the local IT sector, says the development of such viruses and Trojans could be state-sanctioned.
I was told by our security experts that it's very sophisticated, and people do have a tendency, once that happened, to use the term, you know, state-sponsored attacks and so on.
China's state-sponsored cyber hacking has become a source of tension with Washington. And this week, the director of the FBI said Beijing is at the top of the list of countries using such tactics to attack U.S. corporations and government agencies. China has accused Washington of the same. Ivan Broadhead for VOA News, Hong Kong.
Mass protests against Chinese rule in Hong Kong are shaping election campaigns in Taiwan. Many citizens in Taiwan fear China will govern it someday as it pushes for unification. That has pressured Taiwan's ruling party and the more anti-China opposition party to make strong statements in favor of Hong Kong's protesters. Ralph Jennings reports for VOA in Taipei.
As far as relations with China are concerned, Taiwan's local elections in November are pivotal. Wins for the ruling Nationalist Party would help it keep the presidency in 2016 and would signal four more years of engagement with China, which claims sovereignty over the self-ruled island and wants to take it back eventually. Conversely, victories next month and in 2016 for the opposition Democratic Progressive Party could chill ties with China. It is within this context that the pro-democracy protests in Hong Kong figure to have an impact on politics in Taiwan and its relations with the mainland. Some Taiwanese are afraid of falling under Beijing's rule if their government engages China too aggressively. Shane Lee, a political scientist at Chang'an Christian University in Taiwan, says for that reason the president is under pressure to make a strong anti-China statement as the Hong Kong protests enter a second week.
People nowadays is generally in fear of PRC's taking over Taiwan, either by political means or economic means. So if the government is too weak now, then I think the PRC will be even more adamant on the issue of Taiwan.
Taiwan President Ma Ying-jeou said in an interview with Al Jazeera Television in late September that universal suffrage would benefit Hong Kong's people and the Chinese government's international image. His government's mainland affairs council urged China to listen to the demands of the people of Hong Kong and seek a consensus. Taiwan's opposition party last week asked China to honor what it described as a promise to allow democratic elections in Hong Kong. Tens of thousands protested in Taiwan in March and April this year as Parliament was about to ratify a service trade pact with China. Demonstrators said the deal would bring the two sides dangerously close despite possible economic benefits. That show of hostility has delayed ratification indefinitely and cast a shadow over President Ma's engagement with China. Ralph Jennings, VOA News, Taipei.
A strong shallow earthquake hit a mountainous region of southwestern China late Tuesday, leaving at least one person dead and injuring more than 300 others. Chinese state media say at least 50,000 people were displaced by the quake, which was centered in Yunnan Province's Jinggu County.
The United States Geological Survey measured the earthquake at 6.0 magnitude and said it had a depth of just over 10 kilometers. Chinese authorities put the quake's magnitude at a much stronger 6.6 and said it struck just 5 kilometers beneath the surface.
The official Xinhua News Agency says nearly 7,000 buildings were toppled and 14,000 more damaged. Many residents spent Tuesday night in makeshift tents as several aftershocks continue to hit the area. Hundreds of troops and rescue workers have been sent to the region, and Premier Li Keqiang has ordered an all-out effort to save lives.
This is China Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, if you're planning a visit to New York, you might want to stay in one of the newest Chinese-owned hotels.
The Hong Kong protests continue to be a source of worldwide attention. In our roundtable segment this week, we're joined by two of the participants from last week's discussion.
Joining us today is Jerome Cohen, professor at New York University School of Law and senior fellow for Asia Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations. We're also joined by Martin Flaherty, visiting professor at the Woodrow Wilson School of Public and International Affairs at Princeton University.
I asked Professor Cohen about the potential narrowing of the differences between the government and the protesters.
I don't think it's realistic for them to persist in a demand that the chief executive of Hong Kong step down. I don't think it's realistic to persist in the demand that Beijing withdraw the decree that limits the manner of the election of the successor in 2017 to the chief executive. What is realistic is that they focus on trying to expand the nominating process to allow a much broader group of people to participate in the nomination of candidates to be chief executive. I think Beijing might consider proposals within the ambit of the existing decree, and that imaginative good lawyers and other reformers in Hong Kong should be capable of coming up with some formula that will expand significantly the nominating committee. This is a hope, and if it doesn't succeed now, we have to worry about a renewal of the massive demonstrations, or at least a continuing broad dissatisfaction with Beijing's leadership.
And I would agree with much of what Professor Cohen says. Even now, what is occurring are instant analyses of who won and who lost to date. And I think the short answer is neither side has completely won, neither side has completely lost. It is clear that from the Chinese perspective, they are not going to be able to just ram through what they thought they would be able to ram through without much opposition, which is to have a very constricted nomination process for the chief executive. It's clear that that is going to meet and has met with enormous popular dissatisfaction in Hong Kong, and that the great segments of the people of Hong Kong know when the nomination process has been too severely constricted, when they see it. You know, conversely, I agree that it is unrealistic to think that there is going to be far-ranging reforms. So the students in particular are not going to get everything that they initially demanded. When it comes to the specific areas for compromise, I think I'd say two things. One is I may disagree slightly with the fate of the current chief executive, C.Y. Leung. And the only reason I say that is there are press reports coming out, which may or may not have been leaked by official sources, that he received a $7 million payout from an Australian firm to essentially lobby on their behalf. And one wonders whether that isn't the beginning of some face-saving way to have him step down or be ushered out, not as an immediate response to the students, but as a way to indirectly accede to that demand.
I like that a lot, Martin.
Yeah.
This might take some time to investigate the facts of this, but this would be a wonderful excuse for getting rid of the chief executive at a time when Beijing nationwide is emphasizing the need to combat corruption.
Absolutely. It really dovetails with one of President Xi's main initial focuses, which is the fight against corruption. The second thing I'd say it would really be to agree with Professor Cohen, which is I think that there may well be room for creative compromise with regard to at least expanding the number of candidates who would be available to be nominated. And I think that some movement on Beijing's part would go a long way to satisfying a lot of the student demands in Hong Kong.
Also, the students have to take some broad perspective. It's obvious that what they have done is of very great significance. I think it will have a continuing favorable impact on the future of Hong Kong and on Beijing's future attempts to further regulate Hong Kong. But these things take time to sink in. I think the students can take enormous satisfaction of the extent to which they have really commanded the attention of the world and undoubtedly of many people in China who are increasingly learning about this, although it may involve some skill on their part and how to interpret their own New China News Agency dispatches that they've been treated to in their media.
And indeed, I hope one thing that it does from the Chinese perspective, from the perspective in Beijing, is at least indicate that demonstrations, at least in Hong Kong, don't necessarily lead to mass chaos. If, yes, indeed, the students have closed down the central business district, but their demonstrations have been completely peaceful and indeed so decorous that they clean up after themselves in a way you just don't see with regard to demonstrations anywhere else in the world. They're very orderly. And one would hope that that does send some sort of message, at least to those who are open to receiving it in Beijing, that, again, this kind of expression of public opinion is not something that automatically merits a brutal crackdown.
And yet we saw last Friday some violence in the streets and reports of gangs being hired to frighten the protesters. What effect did that have on the protests? Did that help to perhaps hasten the decline in numbers of protesters on the streets?
Last night I talked to one of my younger colleagues at NYU's U.S. Asia Law Institute. He's a Hong Kong barrister who had just returned from 10 days in Hong Kong. He grew up there. He knows Mong Kok very well. He said that following the intervention of these thugs, which drew such a huge critical response from the world as well as in Hong Kong, that Mong Kok since then has been totally peaceful because of the way the students reacted. He said before the demonstrations, he occasionally worried about going to Mong Kok at night because it wasn't the safest place in the world. But during the demonstrations, he never felt more comfortable once they got rid of the thugs.
And that confirms a kind of more general feeling I have, which is that when the demonstrations are met with force, whether it be tear gas or whether it be thugs, that has the effect of actually stiffening the resistance of the students rather than undermining it. And I think one thing, with the exception of the apparent unleashing of thugs in Mong Kok, one thing that the leadership is to be commended on is precisely the general restraint they've shown to these demonstrations so far.
What about the implication in the future for Hong Kong as a business center? Looking at this in terms of the sort of the small businesses, there have been a lot of complaints by some of the, you could call mom and pop businesses, that the demonstrations have interfered with their business, but also major corporations that have locations there.
I do think that if these protests recur because of the failure of negotiation and they go on and on, this will have an impact on both local small business and international multinational corporations. But I think the most important impact on business may be that it's going to be harder for the tycoons of Hong Kong to continue to insulate themselves from the kinds of economic and political pressures that have been growing against their romance with the communist leadership. I think these protests have shined a spotlight on the activities of the tycoons and may increasingly isolate them and gradually reduce their influence and make Beijing seek to get political support from a much broader segment of the community.
I think there is nothing that, at least initially, Beijing and the tycoons would have wanted more than to have Hong Kong develop into another version of Singapore, which is to say a, you know, free economy and rule of law when it comes to financial matters, but a very constricted political space and a very constricted space for freedom of expression. I think what these demonstrations are showing quite dramatically is Hong Kong is not Singapore, that precisely because Hong Kong has a very robust rule of law that goes beyond just financial matters and extends to freedom of association and extends to freedom of speech, that you have a large segment of the public mobilized, which cannot be ignored either by Beijing or by the financial elite in Hong Kong.
Jerome Cohen, professor at New York University School of Law and a senior fellow for Asia Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations, and Martin Flaherty, visiting professor at the Woodrow Wilson School of Public and International Affairs at Princeton University.
A Chinese insurance company is buying one of the most prominent business landmarks in the United States, New York's luxury Waldorf Astoria Hotel.
Hilton Worldwide said this week it is selling the hotel to the Anbang Insurance Group for $1.95 billion. That makes it the highest price ever paid for a U.S. hotel and the most ever paid by a Chinese buyer for a building in the United States. As part of the deal, U.S.-based Hilton will continue to manage the property for the next 100 years.
The hotel, located on Park Avenue in the heart of New York, opened in 1931 and was declared an official landmark in the biggest U.S. city in 1993. Beijing-based Anbang is planning a major restoration of the 47-story tower to return it to its Art Deco grandeur.
Quite a magnificent building, Sarah. And you know, over the years, the 1,413-room hotel has attracted some of the most famous U.S. entertainers, including Frank Sinatra and Ella Fitzgerald. Even film star Marilyn Monroe once lived in a $1,000-a-week suite at the Waldorf Astoria.
If those walls could only talk. Well, now its cheapest room is listed at $549 a night, with a penthouse suite going for $2,399. Well, I did stay there once in 2009. It cost quite a bit less then, and thoroughly enjoyed the experience. The lobby is unique with its clock created for the 1893 World's Fair in Chicago.
If you happen to be listening to our program from a room at the Waldorf Astoria or any place in the world, we'd still like to hear from you. You can email us at voaasia@voanews.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook and Twitter, also Weibo. And check out our program page. It's at voanews.com /China Focus.
That's it for our show. I'm Sarah Williams.
And I'm Jim Stevenson. Thanks for listening to China Focus.